All right, the 2017 G1 Climax is in the books. It was just this ridiculous tournament that anybody that has not watched it yet, go back and watch it on New Japan World. It's been incredible, and to try to keep up with everything. And the ending came this morning with this another fantastic match, the latest one with Naito beating Kenny Omega in the finals. So he is a two-time G1 tournament winner. And I couldn't think of anybody better that I could talk to the tournament about than John Pollock, my buddy up in Canada from Fight Network and Live Audio Wrestling, who I consider one of the foremost experts when it comes to New Japan Pro Wrestling. And it was a hell of a tournament, wasn't it, John?
Yeah, that's putting it mildly. Thanks a lot for having me on, Brian. I'm looking forward to chatting about the tournament, because I really felt that this G1 is going to be the measuring stick for years to come. And it's certainly not a bar I think is going to be surpassed anytime soon. I think that this last month, it's really incredible now that the tournament's over and you can sit down and really process just the quality and quantity of quality matches you got over the past 28 days.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, in talking about, like, this is going to be, you know, the measuring stick of everything going forward, but especially when it comes to the G1 and anything New Japan related. So to get it out of the way, best G1 climax of all time?
I'd have to say so. I mean, you go back to like the pre-Ustream era, and I think as a North American viewer, it was tougher to digest the entire G1 outside of the finals or maybe the final few nights at Sumo Hall. And I've got to say, from the tournaments where I've seen every match, this one to me is hands down the best tournament. I think it was ahead of 2013, ahead of 2014, and I think by a significant margin too. Like this one, this truly, I feel, if you want to argue this is the greatest tournament you've seen in pro wrestling, this is the tournament to make that argument for.
Let's talk about the last 3 days in particular, because obviously we came down to just four guys, two guys in the A block and two guys in the B block. And, you know, it came down to Tanahashi and Naito. And then it also came down, obviously, to Okada and Omega. So Tanahashi and Naito, Tanahashi just astounds me of how good this guy is, because now he's 40 years old. He's wrestling with a torn bicep. This guy has taken so much punishment over the years, but yet this match was simply incredible on what they were able to do. And Naito's out there, and like, he had a bum right shoulder that he wrestled like the last week or so on. The level that those guys had at those injuries, that to me was just incredible, that not only were they able to wrestle, but wrestle at that level in a match with that kind of importance.
Yeah. And that's been the constant theme of Hiroshi Tanahashi throughout this entire tournament, was that he's working within these parameters and doing phenomenal storytelling around this very legitimate torn biceps. And I think going into the final weekend, there was all the reasons in the world with the expectations so high from this tournament, and can they top last year's final three nights at Sumo Hall? Like, you can come up with all those reasons, and I don't think there was one person out there that didn't anticipate that these guys were going to go out and just blow the roof off three consecutive nights. And that's the amazing part to me, Brian, is that here we are chatting after the finals, and Friday night's main event seems like a distant memory. And that's a match that most G1s, that would have been match of the tournament. The heat was through the roof. The storytelling was tremendous. And at the end of that match, there was part of me that was just really hoping this should be the last time we see Tanahashi till the dome. But I think both of us realized that's unlikely, and his angles have been set up for the rest of the year. But this is someone that could very well use a number of months off. And this tournament, that's the part that you look at, is just that even Tanahashi, working a more reduced style than in years past, still what he put himself through in this tournament, you have to wonder if that's going to have a negative impact in the months and even year or so to come out of this.
And that's the thing when it comes to Tanahashi, you know, and that injury, like, you know, take some time off. And I agree with you. I'd love to see him take time off to the dome. I mean, hell, if he wanted to take a year off, I'd be fine with it. Because I can only imagine what any kind of a break would mean for him to be refreshed, you know, physically, mentally, everything, you know, at this age and this stage in his career. But he's just like, nope, I'm fine. You know, this is what we do. We go out there, we fight through injuries. injuries, and we go out there and we put on a show, and we still put on the best matches that we can. It just, I just wish for his sake and even for his longevity, he would take some time off.
It's an old mentality that's instilled in so many of the guys that you don't tap out to an injury. You keep going. And if you just want to look at this from a selfish business reason, which is why he's going to continue, I think you can look at, and I'm sure we'll get into this, is that, you know, Katsuyori Shibata, it was the most horrific of circumstances of why this guy had to go away. But his return was, I think, one of the most memorable moments of the entire year. And there's that ability for a guy to go away and then return. And there's so much you can do in that time. New Japan is not reliant on one guy. And that Tanahashi coming back, where he's recharged, he's healthier, he could introduce a new finish. I mean, there's so many different ways you can go that time off is not this awful option from either a health standpoint or for a business standpoint, whichever way you want to look at it. There's a ton to be said and argued in favor of a guy that goes away for a while and then comes back. And if they said tomorrow that Tanahashi is, his arm is destroyed, and they would hold off him and Zach until the Dome, I'd be totally fine with that. But I don't think that's likely to be happening.
I'll go back to Okada Omega here in just a minute. Let's jump ahead to the show on Sunday morning in the finals, because you mentioned the return of Shibata. I mean, I don't think anybody really knew that this was happening. Maybe the announcers were alerted, you know, just before the show or something, but the emotion of the crowd, like when his music hit, and people in Japan were normally, you know, they're just going to sit there and they'll be very respectful. People were standing up. And the second that he walked out, like, cheering wildly, crying from some of the women, and just the emotion on his face as he got in the ring. And I mean, all he said was, "I am alive. That is all." And he threw down the microphone and walked to the back. But it was this incredible moment that not only is Shibata alive, which he very well probably shouldn't be, but he's out there and he's already, you know, he's not performing, obviously, but he's back in the place that he loves and making a return in front of his fans.
This was the one, like, I know in the immediate aftermath, everyone's going to be talking about this main event, but I feel 5 years from now, when people cite the 2017 G1 and just sheer emotional moments, this Shibata return is very much, I feel, going to be one of those hallmarks of any New Japan viewer remembering this moment to me. It was just, you're right, I don't think it was expected by anybody. There was the symmetry of Shibata's initial return to New Japan 5 years ago on the day of the G1 finals, where he came back as this outsider that was shunned by the locker room. And here he is 5 years later coming back as this hero, this guy that the audience just adored and were brought to tears before this guy even appeared in front of them. Just the sound of his music. This to me was an all-time memorable moment and one of the most emotional scenes that I think you can bring up in a wrestling style of context, just with the story of Shibata and also the lingering conclusion you come at the end of this, that this guy plans to wrestle again, which I'm less on board with just because of the nature of this injury. But you were certainly left with that impression that this guy is coming back, and it's a question of when.
Yeah, I agree with you there, because like I said, he's lucky to be alive in some aspects. And then, you know, obviously we're thinking, okay, he's going to make it, but, you know, this guy, his career is over and it should be over. I mean, there's no way he can return, but like somehow there's some kind of, you know, medical procedure and things that they are doing on him that have just been, you know, state of the art, some of them they've never done before. And he's had this amazing recovery so far, but it's one thing to recover to have a normal everyday life, but it's another when you want to go out there and go back to the grind of New Japan Pro Wrestling. And I know he loves it. And I'm assuming the doctors would have to give him clearance, of course, first before he does that. But to me, it seems like just such a risk, but you know, it's his passion. It's what he wants to do.
Yeah, we're somewhat limited in not knowing the full scope of how this recovery has gone, what his doctors have told him, and what his health is. I'll say this going out, he's clearly looked smaller, which would be a natural given that he's probably had very little very little training of any sort since April. So that's to be expected. But I mean, other than that, the guy got into the ring. He took like a small back bump right on the ring. It's very hard to say, but I mean, I'm in the camp where I am not comfortable with the idea of Daniel Bryan returning to the ring. So you take that set of circumstances and multiply it by 100. And that's what you're looking at with Shibata, who, as you said, lucky to be alive, lucky that he has the use of his legs. I mean, this was somebody that very well could have been paralyzed, that could have been in a bed for the rest of his life. How much you are going to tempt that fate at this point, which it seems like he has made a remarkable recovery. But not knowing the full scope of things, I mean, maybe this has been just a modern miracle, but it's going into a line of work that is not going to be conducive for anyone recovering from significant head trauma that he underwent in April.
So we had that finals match. We had Naito against Omega. Naito is the champion. He wins the G1 for the second time in his career. And these guys, I mean, especially considering, you know, all the punishment they had gone through, and, you know, Kenny Omega coming back in less than 24 hours to have this match in the finals and the certain level that they had. I mean, this thing was crazy. There was a couple moments, though, where you're wondering about danger in this match. They did a pile driver outside the ring on a table. Okay. Now, so, I mean, the tables obviously are not as wide in Japan, but on top of that, like they had like, there was a cover on top of it. So it had to be slippery, and they tried to do this pile driver and, that Naito was giving to Omega, and they basically kind of slipped. They didn't go through. They went off to the side. Omega's head just kind of clipped the side of the table, and Naito took a hard fall as well, and he's lucky he didn't hit his head on the guardrail, hit his arm on the guardrail really bad. Omega, it looked really bad when you watch it in slow-mo. It's like, okay, he clipped his head, but like the rest of his head didn't like hit the concrete. He was protected, luckily, by Naito's legs. But I mean, that was still like, why are you even trying this? And then we saw where it went bad, but luckily nobody was injured. But that was crazy.
That was frightening. That was the most frightening thing in the match. And yeah, you're right. It was just like they clear missed the table. And, you know, I'm sure Omega hit himself. It could have been way worse because, yeah, as you said, it was concrete underneath them. And I think that's a level that really doesn't need that they don't need to be going to. That said, I mean, we're looking at a guy who did a dragon suplex back in Long Beach off a ring to a table on the floor. So, I mean, the bar is being set so high, and that you watch something in this that in the general scope of what you have seen out of some of the Omega Okada matches was maybe even more on the tamer side when you're looking at neck-based offense. But this was a frightening, frightening spot. Luckily, they were okay, and it happened so early in the match. This was 7-8 minutes in of a 34-35 minute match that, you know, it's you could definitely see the pace slowed for the next couple of minutes. So I'm sure both Naito himself, like when you're delivering a pile driver like that and you're just your body is anticipating a landing that is suddenly increased by 2 feet because you missed the target, I'm sure Naito was probably not in the best of health from taking that either. It was absolutely frightening to watch that.
Yeah, it was freaky to see that. You know, that crowd throughout that entire match, though, was on their feet. They were excited. They knew how special that this was, and they got down to the finals, you know, or the final few minutes. It looked like for a while there that like Omega was running away with it, and then obviously Naito came back and he basically rose from the dead in this match, and then he ends up winning it. When you look at everything that went on and then what's to come, do you think Naito was the right choice to win the tournament?
I do. I think that Naito feels super hot coming out of this tournament. Because I feel Kenny Omega is so locked in at this point. He's in a solid position. You've got the inevitable fourth match with Okada, which you could do in October. And then I think a lot of people, the match they're going to want to see at the Tokyo Dome is Omega and Kota Ibushi, which they did shoot an angle for afterwards backstage between the two. That I think that's where you can go. And Okada, whether it's Okada, Naito, Or I feel that's the direction you go for Wrestle Kingdom. And I think that Naito is, he's been circling that top main event picture for so long. I almost wish they didn't do the quick title change to Naito last year, and where they flipped it to Naito in April and returned it to Okada in June, that this would have been the culmination of Naito since his transformation into the LIJ character. And the way this story goes, I mean, 4 years ago, this guy wins the G1 as the ultimate babyface that was rejected by the crowd. And here we are 4 years later, and he wins, and he's accepted by everyone. Sumo Hall is chanting for Naito. So I like the way in which they went, and it was, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better match to cap off the tournament and give both guys the momentum coming out of this tournament, because you can certainly have the argument this year, which I didn't think would have been possible back in June, of Kenny Omega's best opponent this year if it was Naito, if it was Okada, because Omega and Naito stole the tournament last year, and I feel they did it this year on the final night as well.
So go back to Friday night. So we get the Okada Omega 3 match. It was the most anticipated, you know, match of the tournament, you know, going into it. And for anybody who watched this, I mean, this was nonstop action from the get-go. This was not one of these, let's get warmed up. This was go, go, go the entire match. And it was, this was rather crazy in how they did this, just from the standpoint of the pace of the entire match. And then Kenny Omega finally got the win against Okada, something he had done. It was like this culminating moment to not only get the win, but obviously to advance to the finals. So now the question is going to be, because obviously these guys, it's the third match that they've had this year. They've had these epic matches that, you know, are hard to be touched, you know, in any year, much less this year, which has arguably been the best year in pro wrestling in, you know, ever, or at least in a long time. I know that it's tough to really grade, because I think any of those three matches, I mean, whichever one that you like the most, you know, you can make an argument for, you know, there is no wrong answer, but how do you look at those three matches and can you put them in an order?
Yeah, it's really tough. I mean, I was talking about it the other day, that the way in which they've laid out these three matches, it's really been, that's been the brilliance of this trilogy, is that it's a story that still has a fourth part to it, that you can watch these matches through, and they all intertwine with one another to tell this lengthier story at the end of it. I'm really partial to the second match, just because they were coming off a match that people were legitimately calling the best match they had ever seen. And how do you top that? How you could have a match that would hands down win match of the year in any other year, and it would fail to reach the heights that you had set in January. So going into that match, there were so many questions of what they would do. Would they change up the match? And here they go 60 minutes. They don't wrestle the match in the pace that you would typically associate with a 60-minute draw, where, I mean, if you're really watching closely, you can kind of see when they're setting the pace, that they're going that length. They did not do that. And the final couple of minutes to me of that 60-minute draw were just so phenomenal, where you just ended things where it was Okada that he just couldn't muster up enough strength to get on top of Omega. So, I mean, I'm really partial to the second one, but this is a trilogy where you can argue either one. I mean, the first one had its own naysayers of how are they going to follow the Wrestle Kingdom card. Are they going to be able to follow Tanahashi and Naito? And they came out and put a 46-minute classic together. And then this third one, it's limited in the fact that you had a 30-minute draw, and the booking was such that having Okada 1 point ahead, I think it told the whole story of the match, that Omega needed to beat him to advance. There was no way to just run out the clock and survive. And it set the whole story of the match, of Omega just not wasting any time and Okada not wanting to get the win with a time limit either. So it set up just to me a tremendous three-match series that if you were forced to rank them, I'm probably going with two as my number one, and probably the Wrestle Kingdom one is second, and then this one like a close third. I mean, it's really hard. What did you feel after three?
Yeah, because the thing is, like, you know, obviously this one that just happened is the one that's fresh in our minds. And I think we're getting to a point now where people don't remember how great the first one was as well, you know, especially some of the stuff that they did in that. Even though this match was, you know, what was it, like 25 minutes? I mean, I feel like I got almost an hour's worth of action in it because it was, you know, they were going at such a pace. I would say the second one still, just because being able to go at the pace that they did and go for an hour and do what they did in that match, that to me is that's hard to pass. I mean, that's just something that stands alone. Yeah, the other two, I think in any order, if you really sit back and you think about it, I would probably go with Wrestle Kingdom and then this one. You know, and to me, because that Wrestle Kingdom one, when you really look back and then you talk about how special, because at the time we're anticipating this match and then you watch it and like there was so much discussion immediately following it and rightfully so, going, dear God, look at what these guys just did. I mean, they had arguably the greatest match, not only of this year or last year, maybe of all time. I mean, it's in that pantheon. We can make that argument. So I would have to go with that one.
Yeah, and it's I was thinking about this as well, is that you watch kind of like this sub story that you could create out of all this for Naito, is that Wrestle Kingdom, everyone remembers the main event. Nobody remembers the classic that Naito and Tanahashi had that preceded it, which was a phenomenal match.
Right.
Same thing at Dominion, where going into that 60-minute draw, Tanahashi Naito had a phenomenal match. And then this weekend, I mean, most years, Tanahashi Naito would have been at the top of people's matches for the tournament, and that was forgotten by night number two. And you had this, finally, Naito goes in against Omega, and he's the guy everyone's focused on coming out of the tournament. So it was kind of interesting to watch these two trilogies, one of which is top of mind for every wrestling fan this year. And Tanahashi Naito, I think a lot of people forgot the fact that they had their own trilogy that was going to peak at the end of the G1.
So let's just quickly talk about some of the rest of the tournament, because, I mean, hell, there was probably like 20 matches that you could point out going, this was crazy good. There's a couple I wanted to point out, just to get quick thoughts on, because like on the opening two nights, I mean, they broke out Naito and Ibushi, and that was opening night. And then the next night they did Kenny Omega against Minoru Suzuki. And then you look at some of the other matches they did, like Ibushi and Zack Sabre Jr., Okada and Michael Elgin, Elgin and Omega, Ibushi and Tanahashi, which, my God,
I love that match.
Jeez, that match was unbelievably good. Is there anything else that really stands out in your mind?
Boy, yeah, there were a lot here. I mean, Elgin, to me, his two matches with Okada and Omega, those ones really stood out to me. I thought Elgin had as good of a two matches as you could have going into those final three nights. I thought Evil and Okada, that was the match of Evil's career to me. I mean, I've always seen Evil as a really good quality upper mid-card guy, kind of. But I saw him as like someone with like the ceiling of a Goto, for instance. And watching him against Okada, I saw the ability that this guy could definitely be a main event player in a year or two. And that's going to be the title program coming out. So that one certainly stuck with me. And I think we'd be remiss not to bring up some of the matches Yuji Nagata had. I mean, at 49, like, the match with Ibushi was something. Conversely, on the B block side, Kojima, like the two aging veterans, just they had some phenomenal matches. And I think with Yuji Nagata, as good as the matches were, he had some of the post match stuff was just incredible. Like Kota Ibushi on his knees, just holding on to the hand of Nagata after he beat him. Bad Luck Fale just bowing down to him. They did it with the gorillas on the final night. So, yeah, you could certainly go down. Ishii as well had an unbelievable tournament. There were so many different stories from the different guys. And Juice Robinson and Zack Sabre Jr., who cemented themselves to me as upper mid-card players that come out of this tournament that were not at that level before the G1.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up next, because those two guys in particular, when I look back at the tournament and saying who benefited the most from this, some of the undercard guys, I guess, those two guys in particular really came out of this looking great. Like Zack Sabre Jr., I think everybody was curious, you know, how he would work, you know, because some people would say, okay, he's not really a heavyweight, but he is. And I thought his style really translated very well with the heavyweights here. And then Juice Robinson, to see the improvement of himself over the last couple of years. And then they gave him a win against Kenny Omega in this tournament. And yeah, it was a roll up, but he hung in there with Kenny, throughout that match. And then he got the surprise win. Those guys came out of it looking great. I mean, in, you know, you talked about, you know, Zach probably against, you know, Tanahashi coming up at, you know, Wrestle Kingdom. Juice Robinson, I think he's probably going to get a U.S. title shot against Omega in the fall, right?
Yeah, I think that that would make the most sense, is that after Juice beat Elgin, that you would figure Juice is next in line for the shot. And maybe you do that on the ROH show in Chicago in October, or you save it for a card coming up. It's, they have so many options, especially for Kenny Omega on the table. I mean, long down the road, you have the inevitable Kota Ibushi match. But before that, I mean, he beats Okada. That's a natural, which I would peg for King of Pro Wrestling. And then you've got the Juice title defense in there, as you do a future title defense against Michael Elgin, likely, as those two have another match together. So, I mean, Kenny Omega realistically has his programs lined up for the next 9 months, I would say, coming out of this G1. He's got lots of different options. And Juice, I mean, to me, Juice and Zach are guys that are instantly inserted, one going for the U.S. title, the other going for the Intercontinental title, that were made coming out of this tournament. And Evil as well, who should be a title defense for Okada this fall, maybe at one of the Destruction shows. So of the guys that to me came out with the biggest jump, Evil, Zack Sabre Jr., and Juice Robinson would be my three I'd isolate.
One of the things that I am very happy about when it comes to this tournament, you just talked about, you know, the future of Kenny Omega with the programs that are set up, is that at the end of this year, we are not going to just be infiltrated with all this discussion of, is Kenny Omega jumping to WWE? Because it is not happening. I mean, well, I'll say never say never. I don't know what his contract is, but he loves New Japan. And the way that everything is set up right now, you can't tell me that they would set this stuff up without knowing that Kenny Omega is going to be here for the instant future. And who knows? I mean, I don't know if he's ever going to go to WWE. Maybe he will, you know, whenever that might happen. But it, to me, it looks like it's not happening in 2018.
I'd be really stunned at this point if he'd be looking at that in the next, within the next 12 months, because you're right, so much has been built around him. Even in losing this final, you have so many programs tied to Kenny Omega. And I think he looks at that. He is a major, major player in New Japan's expansion and domestically in Japan. And I feel that you look at this past year where New Japan World, they really peaked with their subscribers on the day of Wrestle Kingdom. I attribute a lot of that to Kenny Omega being in the main event, and that's why I would go ahead with the Kota Ibushi match for Wrestle Kingdom, because that is, A, it's an incredible number two match to have underneath Okada and Naito, and to me, that's the match that is going to drive the most subscribers to your service, which New Japan World has hardly been the home run that it was set out to be. And to me, Kenny Omega represents, like, in the right match, in the right context, he is your biggest needle mover when it comes to subscribers coming on board.
So I went to a WWE house show on Saturday night after watching, you know, a bunch of the tournament. And obviously, earlier that day, I'd watched Okada and Omega. And I couldn't help myself in watching the show as it went on and saying, because, you know, AJ Styles wrestled Kevin Owens, and then also Nakamura was on the show as well, taking on Baron Corbin. And as great as the G1 was, there was a little bit of part of me saying, hey, I'm happy for Nakamura and AJ Styles, but can you just imagine if they're still in New Japan and they were a part of this tournament too?
There's that what if, and there's the Shibata what if. I mean, imagine him inserted in this tournament had he been healthy. I mean, this is a tournament that, I mean, as we've said over and over, probably the best tournament in wrestling history, and you're looking at some of the other options that were out there. Certainly. I think to me, one of the most intriguing ones is like Juice Robinson and how certain guys look at him, who got out of NXT and took a big risk at the time and how it was viewed upon. And certainly he is a best case scenario. But how many other guys are looking at that kind of an option, that if there is a spot for them to go out and to go to New Japan, and then knowing that WWE probably would jump on Juice Robinson if he becomes available in the next couple of years, that I think you could certainly see a number of guys eyeing New Japan as a very viable alternative to WWE and vice versa. I think guys in New Japan that will still look at WWE as the be all end all for them, and where they have the largest ceiling to make money. But certainly when you look at some of the cast of characters that have gone through that rotating door of New Japan, it's incredible what next year's G1 could be potentially.
Oh, I know, right? It could. Yeah, I can just imagine what that could be. You know, when we look at New Japan right now, and we've seen this upsurge, you know, this big surge in their business, even with the loss of Nakamura and Styles, and with Gallows and Anderson leaving, you know, they are such a hot promotion right now. I really wonder, like, they have a deal with Access TV, obviously, and they're happy with that. But I wonder if there would be another channel here in the United States and in Canada that would, you know, say, you know what, we want to be in business with these guys. We've been on the fence about whether we want to do wrestling or not. Maybe like a Spike TV, who, you know, they've talked about, they've not talked about. Right now they're saying we're not interested in wrestling, but, you know, that is, maybe if the right deal comes along at the right price, maybe they would. But I do wonder if there's another network that would say, hey, you know what, I think we can get a pretty good deal, and look at how hot these guys are, look at the stars that they've had, and look at the stars that they have now, and say, you know what, we want to get in on this here in the United States. We want to get in with New Japan and see where we can go with that.
Yeah, and Spike is the obvious one to me that jumps out, which is going to go through a rebranding over the next year. Yeah. But of the options out there, to me, it would be certainly New Japan. To me, is the most viable wrestling product that is out there, that if a cable network was going to dip their toe into the pro wrestling world, that would be the product that I feel they could make the most transferable to their audience. And I feel it's a natural that you look at Bellator and what kind of an audience would be most likely to cross over to pro wrestling. It would be a New Japan product to me that would make a whole lot of sense, because Access, to me, that show is put together very well. I don't like the fact that they're changing things around to where you don't get those pre-match promos and the subtitles, because that to me added so much context to the matches. So instead of just presenting great matches, but you also added the context, which was so key. That to me is the best way to present it. It's something completely different from WWE's presentation. And to me, it's just Access. The only thing limiting it is just the amount of people that have Access. I'm here in Canada where old Access shows air on the Fight Network, but I don't get Access. Very few people in Canada do. And I'm sure it's very similar in the US as well. So that to me kind of prohibits the kind of growth that if you were on a Spike and suddenly you're on a network that's got 85 million cable homes, that this is a product that I feel would be relatively cheaper as compared to if you were going out and trying to land a WWE contract, that it would make a whole lot of sense. And certainly from New Japan's perspective, I'm sure they'd look at that as well. I think they've enjoyed their partnership with Access, but how much bigger could this be? How many more people could you reach as you're trying to make this US expansion with the more muscle of a Spike, for instance?
Yeah, absolutely. And not to brag, but I'm going to do it anyway. I have DirecTV, so I do have Access TV. So,
oh, okay. Well, well, there you go. Some do. But here in Canada, you need a flashlight to find Access.
Yeah, I'll bet you do. So, you know, one of the other things coming out of this tournament, you know, obviously everybody was talking about just how beat up everybody is over this grueling month-long tournament and just the match quality and the level of it. There's been some discussion about, can they do something different in the future to kind of save the wrestlers during the tournament and beyond, because they get, you know, so beat up through this thing. Do you think that there will be a change to the format, or if so, what do you think they could do? Because I know one of the thoughts is maybe you have more blocks, or maybe you have less wrestlers, or something like that, you know? So I'm curious your thoughts about whether or not they can actually change this format, if they'll actually do it.
I don't think they will change it. I think they're pretty tied to this format, that it's at least a meeting the talent halfway, as opposed to prior tournaments where it was you were getting 8 to 10 tournament matches per show. And I thought those were, while you were in and out in 2.5 weeks with the tournament, I mean, it was just, there was so much that in this tournament format, you may have a great match that at least at the end of the show, you remember the great match. Whereas when it was 8 to 10 matches a day, you might have a blowaway match that is forgotten by the end of the show just because of the depth on the show. So I've liked the move to this current format. More blocks is certainly one idea. I think if you could bring down the amount of matches, that certainly wouldn't be a bad thing, because everyone focuses on the first 2 to 3 nights, and inevitably it's the middle shows that somewhat get forgotten. It becomes very easy to fall behind if you're trying to catch all of these tournament matches, that I think having 9 tournament matches per person, that to me is on the higher side than you need, that you could get away with having less tournament matches while having the same amount of shows. So that would be something I think you could experiment with, but I feel they're going to be tied to this one for at least next year. And 20 guys is probably a good number. I think it works. I don't think you'd want to go less at this point, because I mean, the talent roster is just expanding at such a level now that I don't think you could go back at this point. You could argue the inclusion of a few guys, but to me, I think they have a good mix. To me, Toru Yano is one that I prefer having him in this tournament, that you do get that kind of you do get that variety on a show where there's a Toru Yano match, and how guys are going to acclimate to a Toru Yano match, that it's a bit of a break, and it's still, outside of the Michael Elgin match, they're pretty entertaining matches that Toru Yano can have. So my gut is that they'll stay with this format, but I'm open to changes, because I think if you could bring down the amount of matches so that they mean more and people can instantly have that Rolodex of what the best matches were, that just makes it easier to digest as you're trying to expand your audience, because this is not a tournament that you can grow and gain a ton of casual fans with that are going to be consuming 19 events in the course of a month. It's not realistic, even if your full-time job is covering this stuff.
Only if your name is John Pollock can you keep up with everything.
Yeah, I try, and I'm losing my mind by the end of it.
By the way, at the end of the tournament, and Naito wins, and he's in the ring, how big of a grin did you have in your face when he fist-bumped Daryl the Cat, who is back from the dead somehow?
He is back from the dead, the second biggest return behind Shibata of the show. But yes, Daryl was back, and what a reaction that got. That was incredible.
That was incredible. I was like, how can you bring back Daryl? There was no explanation. I mean, Bad Luck Fale ripped his head off, you know, like, and this is like a nothing thing, like out of nowhere early in the tournament. Like, you just, yep, I just ripped his head off. I just killed Daryl. And then like out of nowhere, Daryl was back.
Yeah, maybe this is going to build to some big showdown with Bad Luck Fale at some point. Maybe Daryl is going to have his own group that he is going to enlist. Maybe this will be some big program for Fale come the fall.
Maybe. So, John, I appreciate the time and helping breaking down you. Like I said, you are one of the experts when it comes to New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I wanted to talk to somebody about the G1 that knew about it far more than me. So I'm glad that you could make time to do this.
Oh, my pleasure, Brian. It's great to chat with you. And yeah, it was quite the tournament. So definitely go out of your way to check out some of the matches that me and Brian brought up, because I was putting down a short list today and I just had 25 matches right there that I feel are all like high level. Like most years you would be just beaming about match number 20 on that list through 25. And this year it really was ridiculous when you actually look down at the matches on paper that you saw over the past month.
Everybody can follow John's great work over at the Fight Network. And also he is a part of Live Audio Wrestling up in Canada, the fantastic show every Sunday night there. And also you can follow John on Twitter. It is at I Am John Pollock. So thanks again for the time, John, and keep up the great work.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
A couple of things before I get out of here. Let me give Live Audio Wrestling and John the proper plug. You can listen to Live Audio Wrestling every Sunday night from 11 to 1 on TSN 1050 in Toronto, Canada. You can also listen to it streaming online. Just Google TSN 1050. You can go to the station website and you can listen to the live online stream. So a couple of things I want to mention here. If you are not subscribed to the Between the Ropes YouTube page, please do that. Just go to youtube.com/between the ropes and subscribe to our page there. I've been doing some different things like the three count video, and I'm hoping to do some other videos coming up here. There's going to be a lot of tweaking. I'm going to be playing around with a lot of different things, and I'm just going to see what is going to work and what I think does not work. And that's the whole thing, is we just want to play around with some different ideas. I want to get used to doing more video and see what works. There's going to be some changes coming up, some tweaks when it comes to some of the graphics and some of the other things with it. And if you want to share any kind of feedback, please do. I mean, you could do it right there on YouTube, but you can also follow me on Twitter. I'm at Brian Fritz, and you can give me any kind of feedback there, and my email address is there as well. So I always appreciate any kind of feedback that you can give. Also, when it comes to the podcast now on Blog Talk Radio, you can tell we've got some ads on there, and I've been playing around some things there with ads in the middle, and I know that might be a little bit annoying to some people, and I'm playing around with the format with that too. And obviously, we don't want that to get in the way of the podcast, but it's just a necessary evil when it comes to trying to make some money off the podcast, so we can continue to do it, because that is taking away from our time, from our jobs, and we need to be able to be compensated for it. So, you know, I don't want the ads to get in the way of the podcast, and I don't really think they are. But if you have any kind of feedback about that as well, feel free to hit me up. A couple of podcasts are coming up later on this week. So I believe on Monday I'll have a podcast coming out with interviews with Drew McIntyre and with Gail Kim. So Drew, of course, is going to be headlining NXT TakeOver on Saturday night, taking on Bobby Roode for the NXT Championship. And then Gail will be challenging Sienna for the Global Force Wrestling Unified Women's Championship coming up on Thursday night on Global Force Wrestling Impact. So be on the lookout for that podcast. And then, of course, later on in the week, it'll be myself and Michael talking about everything going on in wrestling and a complete preview of SummerSlam. That could be a long preview, considering that right now there are 11 matches announced for SummerSlam, and we expect probably one more to be added as well. So be on the lookout for that. We appreciate everybody for listening and subscribing to the podcast. Please do that and rate us and review us, even if it's just a quick line that helps us out, and give us 5 stars. It helps out tremendously. I think anybody that's ever done a podcast or knows about it knows how important that is to helping us kind of rise up the ranks. So if you could do that, please, especially on iTunes, but you can also find the podcast on Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and we're on Blog Talk Radio and anywhere else that you get your podcasts. So you can find Between the Ropes. Some help, please spread the word as well. So be on the lookout for those other podcasts coming up later on this week. Plus, I'll be going to Brooklyn next weekend to cover SummerSlam, and that will include me having some interviews with various WWE superstars. So be on the lookout for that as well. Those will most likely just be on the YouTube page. So another reason why you should subscribe to our YouTube page, because then you'll get those videos and you can check them out, and you can watch those, and they'll probably be pretty good. I promise they will be really good talking with WWE superstars. It's always fun to do. So thanks again, everybody, for listening and for supporting Between the Ropes, and I will talk to you next time right here, Between the Ropes.